Hello, this is Ben Adams, and I will be interviewing Dr. Terman. We are in the UVA-WISE library, and today's date is October 3rd, 2023. So we want to start out with just like a little bit of like general information. So where are you from?
I'm mostly Claim, Hickory, North Carolina. That's where I graduated from high school. My family moved there in 1984, so I had spent time before that in the Corning, Elmira area of New York. But because of work, my dad moved us to Hickory. It was closer to family, kind of worked out well. So I graduated from there. I started out at East Carolina University thinking I was going to be an art education major, of all things. But then I spent 2 years there and figured out I wanted to get into textiles. So I transferred to NC State, and that's where I graduated with a Bachelor of Art and Design degree. While I was studying textiles in the College of Art and Design, I also, discovered that there was like an Appalachian craft industry and became interested in that, and through that I got interested in Appalachian studies, and so I took a gap year, ended up at Appalachian State University to get my master's in Appalachian studies, and then I took a six-year gap year to finally figure out that history was what I was interested in pursuing for my doctorate. So I went to West Virginia University because they offered a regional focus there, and also became introduced to public history while at WVU. And so those were a couple of my my fields in addition to 20th century U.S. So,
how many years have you been teaching at UVA-WISE?
This is number 5.
Okay.
Yeah, I came here in 2019. So.
Okay. So that 2019, that would put you in sort of the prime COVID territory in terms of like that was about to start and everything. So do you have any just sort of general recollections of like the shutdown or maybe your response to the news when you first heard it?
Yeah, I don't have quite as vivid recollections as some people. They remember exactly where they were when they heard the news that UVA-WISE was going to shut down. I think on one level, I was actually teaching a reduced course load. The department allowed me the chance to kind of get in, get to know the community, get my feet wet. So I was not teaching a full course load, which was very helpful. So I was teaching Introduction to Public History and Historic Preservation. I think some of my memories, hearing the news. So, I mean, we had heard about different pandemics, I mean, swine flu and things like that had gone around. And so initially I was just like, you know, meh, whatever. It's going to be another bug that we'll have to deal with and it'll be inconvenient and might get sick. But other than that, I didn't really think much of it until, yeah, probably February into March. It seemed to be like, this might be a little different. And then I heard the news, I think it was Berea College that was the first in the region to shut down. And that was maybe over their spring break, something like that. And we were getting ready to go on spring break. And once I heard that universities were actually, colleges and universities were gonna shut down, like, okay, this is potentially getting serious. Berea decided, if I remember this correctly, to just shut down, finish the semester, and graduate everybody early. And we got the news, yeah, I think it was sometime over our spring break that we were gonna go remote. So we were gonna shut down. Break was extended for another week to give us all the opportunity to convert our classes to online classes. I mean, we had been using Moodle, so for some people who used it more heavily than others, I think the transition wasn't that intimidating. I had taught online since I was at West Virginia University. As a grad instructor, I taught classes online, which was part of the reason, I think, why I got the job I did prior to coming here. I was at University of Nebraska at Kearney, and they were they offered an online master's. So I had done a lot, a lot of classes, some fully online, some hybrid. So I was pretty comfortable with the idea of transitioning online. I think the, I emailed the students, was like, well, I'm comfortable with this, you know, we'll get through it. I kind of knew what to do. I think it was understandably hard for the students and hard for a lot of faculty and hard for a lot of staff on different levels. So for me, the difficult part of it was just trying to reach out to students who are understandably kind of freaked out and dealing with things in their own, you know, families and the circumstances they had to deal with. So it was just sort of the personal management side of it that was really tricky, right? So it was still challenging, but converting to online in the grand scheme of things was the easiest thing that I had to do, I think. So
were there any other things you had to change about, like drastically about your work or personal life in response to the pandemic?
Oh yeah. I'll be a little personal on this interview, but my significant other is currently a professor at Morehead State University. And so it was not so easy for us just to shut down and pull out of one of the households. We had to manage two households while all of this was going on. And I did kind of wonder, and I don't think I did anything technically illegal, so I'll go ahead and say it on here. I mean, during the shutdown, when nobody was supposed to be out, I mean, he and I would have to bounce back and forth. Thankfully, gas stations were open and things like that, so we could do that. But I remember watching with a little bit of envy that some people like had little neighborhood parties and gatherings, and they were just hunkered down in one place for weeks and weeks, which probably, if I asked them, was its own special challenge. But I was like, you know, I'm kind of envious. Like, I want this downtime, but he and I were still doing this the whole time to make sure that our houses were okay. I mean, he's older, so he felt more comfortable being near a hospital in his community as opposed to mine. And so we spent a little bit more time, I think, up there on the whole. So that was chaotic, I think, in hindsight for us. It was just a lot of back and forth craziness to try to deal with that. We did have a couple of nice moments where we stayed in Red River Gorge and graded at the end of the semester and stuff like that. He had a friend who had a Airbnb place, and we just kind of hunkered down and spent 3 or 4 days down there at the end of the semester to just sort of decompress a little bit. So,
Speaking on just kind of the initial shutdown, and you may have already touched on this, so if you feel like you have, you don't really have to share anything, but did you have any like sort of immediate like thoughts or feelings in response to the shutdown?
Yeah, I mean, certainly once I realized the gravity of the disease, was worried about family members, especially my grandmother, who at that stage was already in assisted living. She had dementia, I was worried about her getting it. And that Christmas, she did get it. She got COVID, that was like the worst news I could possibly get. My good old strong, robust mountain granny, though, barely got the sniffles when she had it. So she was in quarantine in another facility for 2 weeks. I think she was like 98 at that point. And I was convinced it was going to kill her. It did end up like, you know, really affecting her, her cognitive abilities. So she, you know, mentally went south much further or more rapidly than she might have otherwise. And she got it again. And I think that probably did really weaken her, and she died at 99. So that was, yeah, I think COVID, I was hoping she would make it to 100, you know, and I think COVID might have sort of robbed her of that. Mm. But yeah, that she was my biggest concern. My dad's older, He's fairly healthy. I did worry about my aunt and uncle and some other people who had some health problems, you know. So those, I wasn't necessarily worried about it for me, or my partner were fairly healthy. But yeah, for our older folks, he had, his mother had a rough go of it, things like that. So yeah, the more frail people in our lives, definitely.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
I'm sure it's a story that resonates. A lot of people have those experiences.
So, in terms of fall 2020, just when this sort of initially occurred, I guess, do you think the college dealt with the pandemic well?
I think, I won't necessarily judge good or bad. I think perhaps the strategy for fall 2020, because we went to the block scheduling, perhaps, and they're not the only ones to do this. I mean, sometimes chaotic or, catastrophic upheavals can provide new opportunities to try new things, right? So, I mean, we got, mRNA vaccines out of this. So, it did present new opportunities to push the boundaries of science and that kind of thing. So I think in that vein, administration saw an opportunity to kind of see how that model of education would work. In my personal opinion, it didn't. It was a disaster. I think, because you're trying to deal with a pandemic, faculty who are not necessarily accustomed to teaching hybrid, as in the case that we needed to, or online, and we're still trying to adapt to the technology, and we're still, a system in place for quarantining and all the other things that that we had to worry about on top of a new semester system. And faculty, I can't speak for everyone here, but we're always committed to trying to provide the best education we possibly can, whatever the circumstances. It's like, I'm gonna take my normal, I think I was teaching museums and archives at the time, take my normal museums and archives class with all of the reading that you all typically do and assign that within 8 weeks. Even though students had a reduced course load, so they would have taken two or three classes during that block as opposed to four or five, right? But what I was finding was students who were already dealing with all the other stuff in our world had to deal with that, and then they had what was effectively for history, philosophy, probably literature, some of the humanities, graduate level reading loads every week. So you're reading a book a week. If you're going to keep up with that schedule, did not work. Just absolutely did not work. And I ended up having to scale back considerably. But I mean, just out of mercy for everybody, myself included, it's like, I can't keep up with this. I don't think everybody else can. I mean, I had students coming in crying and just, I can't do it all. And so, yeah, I mean, I had to make a lot of adjustments to cope with the circumstances of fall 2020. So it just may be a great idea in theory, but in practice it didn't quite pan out the way folks anticipated. I think it was just too intense. So
do you get the impression that COVID had any lasting effects on I guess not necessarily just the college, but that is that's primarily what we're speaking on here. Lasting changes that you've seen as a result of the pandemic is what I'm getting at here.
In terms of like higher ed or our institution, you think?
Yeah.
It's, honestly, that's a question that might be too soon to say. There are a few things that, if I look at other institutions, I mean, there was a considerable drop in enrollment in a lot of Appalachian schools, which it's already happening before that anyways because of outmigration and just population decline. I think rural areas, I mean, it's kind of the same pattern. I worked in Nebraska, it was the same thing. Everybody was going to Lincoln, you know, for job opportunities and things like that. So they were going to colleges in Lincoln and Omaha as opposed to Kearney or Chatham, you know. It kind of like exacerbated some of those existing trends. And there were drops in enrollment in a lot of institutions in the region. Those enrollments, I think, to some extent, had perked back up over the last, like, 2 years or so. So that's what I mean. It's like, maybe it's a little too soon to say. I think it did cause people to kind of reevaluate their, this is why I want students to do this interview too, like, to reevaluate their paths in life and what was important to them. I mean, we all have kind of gone through that, I think. You know, it's affected... certainly has affected faculty and probably staff's conceptions of work-life balance. Losing people, you want to kind of hold on to the folks who are around you and spend more time with them, right? So you start to think, maybe I don't need to work 10 to 12 hours a day. Maybe I can scale back on that a little bit. So I think there are some changes in terms of mindset and attitude towards work that are positive, I mean, needed to happen. And COVID kind of put those things into relief. You know, I'll also say too, though, it's too soon to see how COVID, or to conclude that COVID affected our enrollment, because we have a new enrollment guru who has turned enrollment around for us. How long it's going to last, or, you know, what it's going to look like in 5 to 10 years, hard to say. So yeah, some of that I can't answer quite yet. That may... you know, may take some time to figure out exactly what kind of disruption it was in terms of students, you know, in the institution and our growth. I mean, right now we're actually in a really good spot. Just kind of a good place to be, I guess. So.
So broadly throughout the COVID pandemic, were there any lessons or insights that you feel like you learned as a result of it? And I mean, from, you know, knitting to something profound about your personal faith, you know.
Yeah, I guess going off that. I can approach this a few different ways. So don't let me forget to talk about my teaching. that is one that did change as a result of COVID. But personally, yeah, this whole work-life balance, which I'm never one to change anything overnight. I really admire people who just wake up one day and be like, I'm going to do something differently today. And they make the change and it sticks. You know, I'm not one of those people. I'm all about increments. But yeah, it forced me, well, that and our current political circumstances, the political strife and discord that we're all dealing with, forced me, to find more productive ways of coping with stress and burnout. I'm going to say this without being too specific. I reached out for some help and developed some practices in my life. I mean, for instance, I probably have told you all this, that I last year signed up for yoga teacher training. And speaking of increments, I'm still working on that. That was something I wanted to do years ago. It always helped me during stressful times. I'd sort of let it slip over the last, while I'm trying to build my career and get tenure and all that, I was like, yoga became something I did, you know, once or twice, well, maybe 2 or 3 times a week to something I did like once a month, you know, while I was sort of in the career building stage. And it's like, that's not okay. Letting your exercise and your nutrition and all that sort of fall off because of work. Not okay. It's not okay to do that. You know, and it affected my mental health and my outlook and all sorts of things. So it's like, yeah, I think COVID gave me a swift kick in the rear end. Like, you have to prioritize. it's kind of like when you get on a plane, right? And they tell you with the oxygen mask thing, you have to put oxygen on yourself before you can help anybody else. It's like, if I'm going to be a good professor, if I'm going to be a good citizen, if I'm going to be a good human in this world, I got to be able to breathe, right? And I'm not doing anybody any favors by working all the time. So it did. And like I said, it's not perfect. And I'm still, like, right now it's mid-semester and I'm like, I have a lot to do, you know, but I've stuck with doing almost a daily, even if it's like 10 to 15 minutes, like daily meditation and yoga in the morning, and, you know, making some changes. I've stuck with my exercise, things like that, that I would attribute to COVID. So that's kind of the personal side. So the pedagogical side, so teaching, I think it helped me in a couple of ways. It released me. I think maybe not so much in terms of my public history classes. I've always been very comfortable, and you all do sort of project-based, hands-on learning. That's part of public history, but for like surveys and things like that. Okay. For surveys and things like that, you know, I always was very, like, rigid in terms of sticking to a lecture and sticking to a structure and assigning quizzes and assigning tests and doing sort of the traditional history class, history survey. I mean, I think you all know what I'm talking about. So very, very structured, very rigid. And I'm like, you know, in the middle of COVID, I'm like, I gotta let some of this go too, not just for my own sake, but for my students. And I used that as an opportunity to kind of experiment a little more with this idea of hands-on learning. I've been doing this with public history for years. Like, why can't I try to do this with a survey? I still have quizzes, but they're open book, and they're based on just, you know, I mean, are you able to open the book and do the reading and get the content, you know? And I'll give lectures, but I focus a lot more now on getting students to actually read primary source documents. They have to lead the discussion. They work within the framework of teams. They have to, you know, learn to interrogate historic resources. So I probably wouldn't, I mean, maybe I was moving towards that before COVID, but COVID was a good, again, a catalyst to get me to rethink, because, again, I'm aware of what everybody's dealing with, and nobody wants to have to cram knowledge for an exam while they're dealing with all the stuff that's going on. So it was a way of trying to create a class that's a little more enticing, a little more engaging for those surveys that I thought would help people. And it gives them skills that they can use later on, too, as opposed to just memorizing information. So yeah, I did kind of reevaluate things. As for the public history, it got me to do more digital stuff. So, hence the Clinch Coalition 25th anniversary, yeah, digital project. It's like, you do some of this stuff remote. It's not ideal, but, you know, it's a good opportunity to kind of explore that. So in
terms of, like, I suppose we're all historians or working on it here. When COVID is something that people will go to read about in a book, you know, that happened long ago, what would you want future generations to you know, take away from your experiences or our experiences?
I appreciated, I guess as a historian, I was listening, you know, like everybody listening to the news a lot during the time when the first shutdown. So, and then oddly enough, and I cannot tell you the authors or the titles or anything, but there were a couple of books that came out, probably because of like swine flu and Ebola and these previous pandemic scares, that there were some historians, and I think there might have been some journalists in there who were starting to ask questions about what pandemics do to society. And, you know, it was kind of an interesting question to think about and then watch as it happened, because they seemed to conclude pandemics can make society more egalitarian, or they can, I mean, they always threaten to, like, realign power relations and things like that. So they can make them more egalitarian, but they can also make them more autocratic, right? And it kind of depends on how the leadership responds and how the, you know, the population, like what goes on with them and how they respond. And I don't know, jury's still out, perhaps to see how that plays out, because we're not done with this pandemic either. You know, we can look at like the Black Death, and it actually, in the end, as horrible as it was, helped to elevate labor, right? They commanded more for their work. So it's, I don't know if that totally answers the question, but it's just the kind of thing I've been thinking about, and I might not live to see the answer to that. Like, how is this gonna play out in the long term? And I think the question about, you know, how it's affecting higher ed, there's a lot of other stuff going on in conjunction with the pandemic that is reshaping or affecting higher ed. So yeah, it kind of remains to be seen what comes of these things.
Well, Dr. Tarman, I believe that's all we have for you here today. Yeah. Really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you very much for, well, I compelled you to do this, but thank you for interviewing me. Full transparency. So yeah, no, thank you very much. You both did a great job.